Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking to a business leader. It is a Wednesday, you know, which means we're either looking at an industry or, you know, profiling a company or speaking to a business leader. And for today, we're doing a little bit of all of those things because we're going to be talking about what the coffee shop market is looking like in South Africa, with perhaps you know, the best name or the best known name in coffee shops, and that is Starbucks, but specifically Starbucks in South Africa. So we're joined by Adrian Mazey, who is the CEO of Starbucks Southern Africa and also the founder of the Rand Group, which has the license for Starbucks in the region. So it should be, you know, quite an interesting, you know, conversation, because, you know, Starbucks is one of those things that you literally see all over the world, and we're keen to know how the experience in South Africa has been and how the business has been performing. Specifically at this time, I think everyone wants to know what the effect of COVID-19 has been on different business models, and I'm sure the, you know, the coffee industry is no different. Adrian, greetings to you.
Good morning, Mateo, and thank you for having me.
I think a good place for us to start is maybe getting a sense, you know, or an understanding of how you found yourself in this position, because, you know, for a long time, we sort of associated the Starbucks brand with Taste Holdings, which had a number of different brands under its umbrella. But now we have Starbucks that's recently moved over to, you know, to the Rand Group. Can you take us through that journey?
Yeah, it's been somewhat of a, it's been for me a fantastic journey, but it was somewhat opportunistic. 2015, Taste Holdings acquired, was granted the rights to Starbucks for Southern Africa, and did remarkably well to accomplish that and acquire that license. And along the way, they got themselves into some financial troubles, primarily unrelated to Starbucks. To be honest, that business was in the early innings of development. And as with any growth business that needs scale, they hadn't reached it yet before they ran into financial troubles across their organization. And I was involved as a shareholder in that company, and it bailed them out on a personal level, as well as with my partners, back in 2018, and became a shareholder. And then I saw things trending in the wrong direction, was trying to find a way out to ultimately save investor capital. And through a process of traveling around the globe on a personal level, as sort of a one-man show, was able to, first of all, acquire the license from Starbucks. So before we acquired the assets from Taste Holdings, I was granted the license, and Rand Group was from Starbucks Corporation. And then that led to us acquiring the business on December 2nd, 2019. And so we've now been operating the business for 16 months, and we're coming on our 5th year anniversary as Starbucks South Africa this month, April. But for us as Rand Group, it's been a complete refresh and restart. So we're just past our 1 year anniversary, and it's been an enjoyable, very challenging 16 first months. Who could have anticipated COVID? And acquiring any business from a failed business is never necessarily the easiest thing. So there is a conversation to be had about change management that we've gone through, but compounded by COVID, we really have had little sleep in the last year or so.
You know, as you're talking, one of the things that people might be curious to maybe understand is, you know, what belief do you actually have when it comes to Starbucks in the local market? As you said, you, in your own personal capacity and through your company, have, you know, had been bailing out you know, Taste Holdings in the past, you know, specifically around this particular brand. So what do you see, you know, because I can imagine that others would have easily just decided to fold and call it quits on the South African market.
Yeah, I'd be disingenuous if I said to you my original purpose for getting involved was, well, I will tell you what my purpose is today. But initially it was, how do I save my investment? How do I save my partner's investment? And how do I save the business and everyone that worked for Taste Holdings? For me, it did become personal. I was somewhat associated with it. I didn't operate the business, but I was an investor. And to acquire and rescue Arthur Kaplan, NWJ, Maxis, Domino's, and Starbucks was way outside of my personal range, but was able to assist in a variety of ways. And then when we got the business, then learned more about the Starbucks brand. So I've been a lifelong Starbucks customer. I do reside in Los Angeles and have been in the United States for 29, 30 years. But I am born and raised in South Africa, and I'm actually here every 2 weeks, even as recently as starting in October when once the airports opened. And, you know, I've fallen in love with the ethos of the company and the idea at my age, which I'm 47, so I'm neither too young or too old. I'm at a stage of life where I have a network and the resources where I can bring together and build something special that can give back to South Africa through the lens of community, but through the lens of financial discipline. So the idea is to build using this brand, which I think is somewhat unique globally, which is very long-term, playing the infinite game about how resilient and how long can we stay in the game and how long can we can build a business that continues for future generations, around which I keep referring to this term oasis in other interviews, but really create this community where people are respected, people that work with us and are employed by us, are what we call them partners, are respected, treated fairly, and then the community around them will benefit from hopefully what is a happier workforce that feels more rewarded through what they do day to day and create opportunities for me. So it's become a far greater interest in giving back and building something that's sustainable and resilient, and helping these overall South African and Southern African community and macro than it is being purely a saving my investment, which we had started as. But you need that higher motivation, and that's really what it's become. And I couldn't think of a better brand than Starbucks to do that. It truly is about managing a business through the lens of humanity. And that's how I got involved. That's where I sit today with Starbucks and why I'm traveling, you know, twice a month around the world to come back to South Africa to try and make this work in such challenging times.
You know, I like the fact that you've spent that much amount of time having that exposure to the United States and, you know, traveling around the world. I've done a little bit of traveling myself, and one of the things that you appreciate about the Starbucks brand, in particular, you know, when I was in China, when I was in Hong Kong, and I think in also Canada and London as well, you sort of see that the format of the Starbucks shop is sort of more, you literally see them around the block, all over the place. I remember about 2 years ago when I was in Shenzhen, China, you literally see them around almost every corner, almost every block. And you understand what people mean when people say that there's a Starbucks around every corner. And I can imagine what it's like in the U.S., but when you contrast that to the format that is taken in South Africa, where you have these large sort of, I'm going to call them experiential stores. I remember about 2 months ago, I went for a coffee tasting at the location in Melrose Arch. And that format is so big and it's so different, so grand, you know, compared to other parts of the world. What do you make? Because I do understand you sort of inherited the format, but what do you make of that format versus what you've seen in other parts of the world? And do you have plans to make some of those smaller type of locations? Because I know that, you know, when you guys first came in, there were plans that there's going to be an opening of 200 stores and all of these things. So is that plan still there? What do you make of the format? Is there something to change? Is smaller the way to go? Your thoughts?
Yes. So I think that format, to be honest, is one of the most, was one of the most challenging structures that Tate Holdings had to overcome. They clearly are too large, and it is a unique situation here in South Africa, given the size of the stores. What you've described, what you've seen in China, is what we have in the United States, but that's a developed market where Starbucks has now been for 50 years. Everybody knows what to expect. They understand the brand. They're familiar with it. In South Africa, there is the education that needs to happen, and we're still early on the journey. So we're the equivalent of 1976 for Starbucks in the U.S. as we are in South Africa. So we've got to educate the consumer. We've got to get them to to not buy into the brand per se, because the brand is well known, but a brand is just a brand, right? You actually have to back it up with substance. And that's what we are trying to do today. But backing up to the store format, there was a time when Starbucks in that era, when they first took over the brand, was of the belief that going towards roasteries and larger format was the way to go. We have somewhat now, well, they, I believe, and I can't necessarily speak for them, I can only speak for us, especially in the pandemic now, things have changed and moved much more towards the smaller format. And for us, while we launched in Cape Town with still large stores, and I say large by 150 square meters relative to the 300, 400, 500 square meter stores that our predecessors had built, it's still substantially large relative to what I'll see in the United States when they may be 20 to 30 square meters. Our desire now is to get into the neighborhoods, make it accessible, so everybody can reach, and you know, on a daily basis, you will expect to see a Starbucks on the corner, and we can't build these big stores to make the economics work. So you will be seeing us roll out smaller footprints. We're in partnership with ShopRite in their high-end Fresh Egg locations, and we will do a fair amount of rolling out with them, and they've been fabulous partners. And then within the main malls, we will still have our presence, and they will be our flagship stores, and then we will supplement that around each one with your corner neighborhood store, especially now with the world where people are working from home, although I do think that trend's going to revert back to people moving the offices. So you will see smaller footprints, more accessibility, a drive towards mobile order and pay, Uber Eats, Mr. D and the likes to serve the customers and changing behavior. And then you'll see the add-on of drive-throughs as we can and come across space that's available. Those are quite difficult because most of the incumbents, the larger well-known brands have already taken over those sites. So we're struggling to find drive-through locations, but eager to get that. So it's absolutely a move away from that large store, but those large stores are assets that we will continue to retain. We need to sweat that asset. So we've got a whole team working on it today to try to figure out how to maximize and make those spaces work, because they don't work in that size format. There's only so much coffee one can sell, and a 500 square meter store is never going to justify the amount of cups of coffee we sell. No matter how popular our sales are, a cup of coffee still only costs 30 rand. So we're working on that. But yes, you will see us scale down and be far more accessible through the digital world and then in the neighborhoods.
And when it comes to that, I really like that approach of, partnering with the brand, like ShopRite, like Checkers, and just finding that store-in-store sort of model and, leveraging off of a well-known local brand, because as much as Starbucks is well-known internationally, you know, for the local market, especially in the, in the corner coffee shop market, one would imagine that you guys are probably facing a lot of competition from, you know, well-established, mom-and-pop sort of locations that have, you know, perhaps a cult sort of community type following. So the partnership with the Checkers makes sense, you know, from that point of view.
Yeah, so there's two parts to that. On the partnership with them, look, we're better together as a group, right? As a culture, as a society, as a globe, as humanity, we work better together. No one individual can accomplish what we as a humanity, as a race, have accomplished. So that's on the global scale. And I'll narrow that down to what we're trying to do. ShopRite's been in this country for as long as Starbucks has been around on the globe, and they have the network, the resources, the understanding, and the interest and willingness to work with us to build this. And whatever the format might be, whether it's in as shop in shop or it's in one a line shop in a property some retail developer that they own, we were benefiting tremendously from that, and they're benefiting from hopefully the foot traffic that we bring, the brand appeal, and our speciality in running a coffee shop. So that is the one point, and I'm very happy to be with them, and we're eager to find other partners like that. Well, that will take the long-term view on growing and investing in South Africa. As to the local boutique shops, the mom and pops, so we're very actually supportive of them. They do serve a different customer. Our breadth and depth of our menu is one thing that we wanted to address is, you know, while we're viewed as coffee because we are pariahs of coffee, purveyors of coffee, we are specialists, and that's what we really ultimately are. The breadth and depth of our menu is second to none. And most of our sales, to be honest, are not even coffee. So the menu that I would like to speak about is quite important as to what our offering is, because it's often focused on just coffee.
No, thank you for that. I think, going forward, it will be interesting to see what the growth and uptake will be, especially of, the new format, and then, keeping some of the bigger locations as is. So with that in mind, footprint-wise, what does Starbucks look like at the moment?
So at the moment, we have 24 stores. We've got one closed in Discovery, the Discovery building here in Sandton, with no office workers back. And then this year, we are actively and aggressively trying to grow and reach an internal target. It's a stretch target of 50. I think that's probably unlikely, but between you'll see between 15 and 25 stores being built this year. So 100% growth in 1 year. We think it's a great time to be investing in building. We do, but think things are going to turn around. And this business needs scale. So as much as one will complain about, or you'll hear the pundits say the business hasn't made money, it absolutely should not make money in the early days. If it does, that would be fantastic. But I don't believe there's any market in the world where you come in with a business of our scale, that the back end of this business is not as simple as your boutique or your mom and shop opening up in the corner, buys coffee locally, throws in a coffee machine, and and away they go. There is a complexity. And simply in training our baristas, for example, is a 3-month process. There is a lot that happens to get a coffee, Starbucks coffee shop going, and not to mention the investment in the stores, the equipment, the training, and then the menu, and importing all those products. So one has to have a strong back office to manage all of that. So we need multiple stores, and as scale grows, the store becomes profitable, or the business becomes profitable. And we are at that point today. So despite COVID, we were able to be cash flow positive during the year, and that's thanks to some of our partners that we were working with. And the trajectory looks really encouraging from this point forward, with or without a third wave.
You know, when the locations that you're now talking about, and all of that, what do you make of the, I guess, the coffee? I don't know what words to use, but then the coffee drinking culture, I guess contrasting it, because you do travel a lot. Had you guys done any type of work around, because I'm sure Starbucks itself knows how many cups of coffee are being drunk in different parts of the world. But in your own work, had you done any of that type of work? I guess this one is more of a fun one, but it would be interesting to know.
So I can tell you, as a South African, I grew up drinking Rick coffee in Frisco. So the instant coffee world is what I've come from. As a person that spends a lot of time in America, I do. One could argue that Americans are sophisticated in coffee, but then there's a general comment that Americans aren't necessarily sophisticated in that side of any part of the world. Then you get the Europeans, who will claim they really are sophisticated in their coffee, and I think that is fair. The Italians, the French, and how they go about drinking their coffee. South Africans, I think, like any culture, like to claim that they're sophisticated in drinking coffee. I think they're as sophisticated as the Americans are. They're also as sophisticated as the Australians are. Whether they are as sophisticated as the Italians, for example, I think it's all a matter of opinion, because what does that mean? The culture here clearly is one where we get together, we used to drink more tea, we drink more coffee, we sit around a table, and we have a social conversation. So in that sense, I think there is the market is in, while one is arguably still in the early stages of developing this coffee culture. I think that is a term that's often thrown around as around sophistications. Yes, South Africans drink coffee. I think we all drink coffee, but it's a growing market. I think I haven't done any personal research, in the sense that I haven't hired McKinsey to come in and do some research on how much coffee is being grown. But yes, South Africans historically had instant coffee, and they're moving more towards not instant coffee, and as what where America was in the 70s, which is what when Howard Schultz joined the company in 19, I think it was 85 or 82, his idea was to move away from instant coffee and create this coffee on the go, where people would drink quality coffee. And we're pretty much, call it as typically South Africa is, we're a few years behind that on the trajectory to the coffee connoisseur. But I believe South Africans are as sophisticated as anywhere else in this day and age, where communications and information is such that information gets shared so rapidly that it's any country in the world catches up with the leader quite quickly from a social trend perspective.
One of the things that was interesting back in the day, when taste was still holding on to The license for Starbucks was the fact that in the group, when you looked at the various brands that were there, particularly, you know, between, let's say, you know, Domino's and Starbucks at the time, was that, you know, talking to investors at least, the sense was that Starbucks was the one making money, whereas the other brand wasn't making money. So against that backdrop, when it comes to growth and scaling the business, you know, the process that you guys are in at the moment, what type of an inflection point, or, you know, is there a certain number of stores, or what metric are you watching, you know, beyond which point you think that Starbucks, you know, it might start to become a profitable sort of entity in South Africa?
Yeah, so no doubt under Taste Holdings, neither of those businesses were profitable. Starbucks clearly had never made any money, and many of the stores had not been profitable. A lot of that had to do with what was your key question, which was those store sizes. It's almost next to impossible to sell enough coffee to cover the rent. So the thesis going in thinking that one was going to sell 2, 3, 4 million rands worth of coffee out of a Rosebank store was a failed one. Since we've taken over, because we're not a listed entity, we've been able to strip away all the bureaucracy and overhead that comes with being listed. And to be listed, and we're invested in the country, but really to be listed, one needs to have scale in this country. And if you don't have that scale, you can't be a micro small cap company and expect to be successful. Maybe it's a path to liquidity for those folks who want to exit the business. And so you go and list, you take some money and you run away. But I don't believe at this point, given the amount of involvement I've had in listed South African companies, that it's a good path to be in if you don't have scale. And Taste Holdings did not have the scale to really cover the overhead of being listed. Now, that said, the underlying brands, there were clearly business model issues. So paying euros, earning ZAR, is also not a model that's necessarily going to work. So they had to have righted that, and they didn't. We've been very aggressive with our conversations, and Europe and Starbucks has been very supportive of understanding the need to make the business model work in South Africa. So at the moment, we are profitable. A lot has to do, with taking overhead out. So skinny the team down, take away all the perk benefits that one comes with bureaucratic and large listed companies, and now focus on running the business and get those stores to be operational. So we can focus on one business, which is Starbucks. They had the problem of focusing in multiple different businesses, which all needed scale. And then they didn't have permanent capital. Their capital was dependent on somebody else's desire to fund them. And if they didn't have the ability to do that internally, they're going to run out of money, which is exactly what happened. We, on the other hand, are a private company. We are not reliant on outside capital. And we have been able to shrink down the business to a core group of individuals that are making a difference and working 24/7. Now, 24/7 is not necessarily sustainable, but we all understand that in the early innings of what we have, we're sitting on quite a gem, and I hope to get. And I think if we keep where we're going, we're going to be very successful. And the success for us is not necessarily a purely financial one. The financial money is the fuel that allows us to build the business, which goes back to my original point, to build something that's sustainable, gives back to the community, and creates a community for the people that work in the organization to be better and be rewarded and fulfilled in a different way. And I think that's the virtuous cycle that we're looking to get to. But as set under the prior owners, that no money was being made, and their liabilities far exceeded their assets when we took over. And unfortunately for us, we had to pay many of those off, but we have got through that at this point.
As we end off the discussion, I just want to maybe proffer this question, just to say, earlier on when you're talking about the expansion plan and how you guys are looking to attack the South African market, you mentioned sort of a multi-channel sort of approach where you've got your own stores, at the same time you've got the partnership with Checkers, at the same time you're also making provision for, you know, some of the online delivery, you know, service channels and all of that. So with all of that in mind, and COVID-19 lockdown restrictions, changes in consumer behavior patterns, and, you know, foot traffic at retail centers, and just generally retail centers as a whole, has that affected what your initial build-out strategy had been when you first entered South Africa, to say, okay, fine, we're going to get into this market and we're going to build X number of stores, scale them down, but we'll have them all over the country. Did that part of the plan get scaled down in any way by the, I guess, that shift to, working from home, etc., and saying that, instead of building X number of stores, we can, reduce that by a factor of, let's say, 20%, and then dedicate more resources to making sure that we are, fulfilling on any online orders that, come. I guess that's also making an assumption on my end that people, want to, buy coffee using Uber Eats or Mr. D.
No, it's a very insightful question, and one I've been thinking about. There is a somewhat of a misalignment on our end because growth is so part of the challenge for Taste Holdings, for what it was worth, is they were obligated but contractually to build X number of stores. So you need the capital to roll that out. And if you don't have the capital, you're in breach of your agreement. We face a similar agreement, but we're funded differently than they are. So for us, it's doable. Now I've been sitting here and thinking about it a lot because in the pre-COVID world, like you described, you want to be accessible, on the street, visible. Now you're seeing all the omni-channel sales come in. The question is, do you need that store that's 100 meters away from the other one? Or are most of your customers coming in through Uber Eats or Mobile Order and Pay and picking up? Now, the Mobile Order and Pay aspect is you still want it to be convenient. So in the US, I can tell you today in Los Angeles, in my area, I've yet to, since the pandemic happened, to go into a store and see a customer other than a customer walk in, grab the coffee that they ordered 10 minutes ago from their home, walk out and leave. They're not sitting in the store. So your format is different. And the number of stores you may require may also be less going forward. So it's absolutely the forefront of our minds. Because we're still so subscale, though, it hasn't changed our growth plans yet. I think when you reach saturation point, that saturation point in the future may be lower than it is pre-COVID. And so you're spot on, and I think we're thinking along the same lines. But for the moment, we're still so early on in this game that we will still continue to build accessibility and reach and the number of stores. So whether it be 200 or 300, it may not be 600 anymore. It may be that we cap it at a certain number, and yet then most of our sales are still coming from the omni-channel. And so you'll do it with lower CapEx. So retail throughout the world is obviously changing. And we're going to have to pivot and be flexible and nimble similarly to adjust to that new model. But a lot of thought has been put into that at the moment. But I agree with you.
So that's been it. It's a very fascinating discussion around the coffee market, coffee shops, Starbucks, moms and pops versus, neighborhood in the shopping shop, together with large retail locations. So it was a, very nice discussion with Adrian Maisie, who is the CEO of Starbucks Southern Africa and a founder of the Rand Group that has the license, for the brand in the region, giving us some insight into what they're doing in the business. They've sort of been they recently took over about a year and a half to 2 years ago from Taste Holdings, and he's just telling us about how they're looking to pivot the business model, looking at different channels of distribution, scaling down the size of the stores, growing that network, and just making sure that there is a consistent experience across across their stores, and also highlighting the need to cut down some of the overhead costs that had burdened the business in the past. So that's been it. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us.
Madiba, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and enjoy the call. Thank you.
This is Madiba's Take.
Quite a fascinating discussion with Adrian just around what's going on with Starbucks. And, this is a company that I have followed for a little bit of time over the years. I used to cover Taste Holdings, which owned Starbucks at the, when I started covering the company, a few years ago. And it's been interesting to see the evolution, over the years. And, with the new team in place, they seem to, have, quite a good plan in place. And one of the things that, I'm curious about is to see what, what the actual success will be on the ground, especially on two fronts. The first one is just The fact that they have decided that they're going to take a multi-channel approach, right? You're not just looking at, the physical retail locations. The physical retail locations such as what we see in Sandton, Mall of Africa, and all of these places, but also looking at what's actually going on in terms of, the moms and pops places. But more than anything else, it will be interesting to see which of the channels that they've decided to attack is going to be the one that actually succeeds in the end, or which one drives the most traffic, what the portion of the pie will be taken on by the online channels versus the store in store partnership that they have with Checkers versus their own retail location. And even in the own retail location, how are the smaller shops how are those actually going to do? So that will be the most interesting thing, to see which channel works out the best. But also tied with the Starbucks is just looking at retail and what the culture of South Africa is, because South Africa, for a long time before getting into the COVID-19 pandemic, had a strong mall culture, foot traffic at retail locations. A couple of years ago, Attack, which owns Mall of Africa, had an interesting statistic that they had close to a million 1.5 million people that walk into Mall of Africa, especially during the festive season, within a month. And that is a lot of people. So in South Africa, people have been used to going to retail locations, especially malls. So as people have sat home and, gone to malls less over this time, and now we're talking about vaccinations and rollout, how is that going to affect or to impact what's actually going on in terms of the market, right? How are things going to develop, and are people going to, this one is no longer just about Starbucks, but has the last year been enough to engender a new sort of behavior in terms of consumers, where we're going to see reduced foot traffic, even when people have that ability to go to retail centers? And that then impacts, as we're talking to Adrian about, that then impacts how the rollout of some of these plans actually then ends up being, right? Do you spend your time building out stores because you're contractually obligated to? Or do you go back to the negotiating table and say, Starbucks in South Africa, we are experiencing good growth in XY channels. Could you renegotiate this contract so that we can take into account these shifts that have been brought on by a situation that was not present when we originally signed this agreement? So that would be an interesting developments to watch. And we just hope for the best. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.